Lib, the York Theatre Royal podcast.
This is a special series of episodes live from the Edinburgh Fringe.
Well, I mean, we're live.
You're listening to this once we've got round to editing it all.
In this episode, we talked to Dan and Nigel, who have done Canary and Crow with Middle Child Theatre. It was an incredible show.
So it's a gig theatre style piece, as Middle Child are known for. So we headed to the roundabout at Summer Hall and had a nice little chat with them in a rehearsal room.
Yeah, we kind of went down what felt like 7,000 flights of stairs to the centre of the earth and found a rehearsal room with not a single normal chair. It was just thrones. Thrones and crash mats, but really loved doing this interview. Hope you enjoy.
And so we're now joined by the company Middle Child from the show The Canary and the Crow. So thank you for coming on. If you'd just like to introduce yourselves.
All right, my name is Daniel Ward. I don't actually mind. Yeah, and I wrote The Canary and the Crow, and I'm also in the play as the bird.
Cool. My name's Nigel Taylor. I am in the play as a character called Snipes, but I also co-composed the music as well. Wow. We all did.
No,
it was me. The title is co-composer, but we all made it together. It's pretty dope.
So for people that haven't seen the show, can you sort of sum it up?
Well... it is a Middle Child do gig theatre. So it's a gig theatre piece about a working class black kid who gets accepted to a prestigious grammar school and about how those worlds collide. But it's also like the music of the worlds collides as well. We've got some cellos, which represents the classical music, and then we've got Nigel compose some beats to kind of represent the kind of more working class world, and then we bring those together. And then... it's also a comment on the education system and the lessons that we take away from school and stuff like that. And it's a fable, it's about a lot of things. ultimately that's the main narrative, but there are loads of different things that people can take away from the play in loads of different ways, hopefully.
Is it an autobiography?
It's semi-autobiographical is the way that we're describing it. Because it's based on my life in parts, but then other parts are kind of mixed up, an amalgam of experiences. It's not a linear kind of like, this is what happened. It's not as simple as that.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about your backgrounds? Because is this your first show with Middle Child? Or have you worked with them before?
I've worked with them before on this, a year and a half ago, doing an R&D project. But I've known Middle Child pretty much since its inception. And I've worked with Paul, who's the artistic director of Middle Child, for 10 years, because we went... Well, I've worked with him. I've known him for 10 years, because we went to drama school together.
What drama school is that?
Lambda.
Ooh, lovely.
Lambda.
And what's your background?
I'm a music producer. I'm also a director of a local company called Beats Bus, or local to Hull, shall I say. And we go to schools and community centres, and we offer like confidence-building workshops through hip-hop. We've actually done quite a lot of work in York. We were funded by the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, they're based in York, so they give us a leg up. So yeah, that's my background, and my involvement came through with Middle Child because I produced some music. They liked the music. It was storytelling, sort of hip hop. I did a workshop with them, and they were like, "Oh, right, you know," offered me, and here I am. So yeah, I mean, obviously, I've got a good relationship with Middle Child, and they're an amazing company. To bring you into this industry and excel your career.
So you did R&D, was that last year?
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us the process of Canary and Crow from the start to where we are now?
Okay, so basically I wrote it 4 years ago. Mm. When I wrote it, I actually wrote it after watching a Middle Child show, Weekend Rockstars, and I thought, oh, that's sick. I love what they're doing. I would love to do it. And I had the idea of the story, but I didn't know how to do it. But after I saw Weekend Rockstars, shout out Luke Barnes, I was like, yeah, I want to do it like that. I want it to be a gig theatre piece with music. So I went away and I wrote it to music, and I sent it out to everyone. And I was like, everyone's going to think this is sick. This is going to be the one. And then everybody rejected me. Everybody. I didn't send it to Middle Child, which is weird. I sent it to so many theatres, and they were like, nah, it's good, but nah. And then, so I was like, oh, okay. And then I scratched it at the Park Theatre with my friend's Fine Mess Theatre, because, partly because people were like, some people's response was, we need to see it. Like, we can't really pick up on what it's going to be like just from the page. So I was like, all right, cool. So I submitted it, got it put onto a scratch night, invited everybody, nobody came. So I was like, oh, okay, I love this industry. And then my friend was like, eventually like, why don't you just send it to Middle Child? And I was like, I don't know. And so I sent it to Middle Child in a submissions window. They have submission windows all year round, I think. Don't quote me on that. And then, yeah, then Paul was like, okay, come and we'll do a research and development week. And so I did it last year with another writer called Frankie Meredith, who's just joined Payne's Plow as an associate writer. And it was me and her, and we were both working on our plays side by side for a week. She had a play called 17, I had The Canary and the Crow. And after that week, we did like a 15-minute, like, sharing of our work that they also streamed to loads of theatres. They streamed it to, like, I don't know the theatres they streamed to. But after that, I had interest in from lots of theatres about developing it further. So I was like, okay, cool. So I went home, developed the script, sent in a second draft. I sent it to Middle Child. I was like, here you go, guys. Could you send it out to all those people that were interested and wanted to talk further? They were like, could we do it? I was like, what? They were like, yeah, we don't. Do you mind if we just do it? Like, we don't want to send it out. It's good. We'd like to go with it. I was like, yes. I was like, yeah, of course. And so, yeah, that's how it came about. And then, yeah, we just got into the room, and then we started 4-week rehearsal, like a normal 4-week rehearsal. And then, yeah, we made the play. Yeah.
So the R&D process, did Middle Child work with you that week, or did they just give you the space?
No, they worked with me. They worked with me. It was me and three actors, and then two writers, me and Frankie. Yeah.
And how much did the script change?
The script changed a lot after the R&D, but hasn't changed hugely, to be perfectly honest, from the first time I wrote it. Not hugely.
But the rest of the show has kind of developed in that space, as I've seen. Yeah.
The musical language of the show has developed. It's an interesting thing when you're working in gig theatre, because you just play, you just kind of work it out and make it up as you go along, really, because it's such a new kind of format. So we just play, we just have fun, and we try a lot of things. And I'm sure Nigel's got like a backlog of beats that we never ended up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
I have. Yeah, it's going on to another musical.
Yeah. Like, so we just tried like loads of stuff, and then yeah, messed about, and then we ended up when something was the right sound, or when
the cellos. Did you have that idea from the start, or was that something that came?
No, the other co-composer is a guy called Fru.
James Fru.
He hates being called James Fru. Just called him Fru. Right, he is classically trained. He's also pretty much the closest thing to a musical genius that I've ever seen. And I would come up with like a basic hip hop beat, and he would like, oh, I like that sound, and then he'll rewrite some of the bass lines in with cellos, but also keeping in mind he had two cellos. He's just really smart. So he'd come on my computer, my keyboard, play it in, and then when the cello guys came in, he was like, right, he literally just called them out. C sharp, A, B, like it was a game combo. And then the guy would write it down and just start playing it. It was I'd never been in a room with that much like talent and ability at our fingertips. Yeah. So, and obviously Dan had written all the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a matter of just getting people in the room and forging that together. And it works really well.
How long did that process take?
I think writing the music, we had a week where it was just me and Fru and Paul, and we just came up with some sounds. Half of that we just threw away. Half of it we kept.
Filed it away for your future.
Yeah. Which was like, when you get the real cellos in, and then like, obviously you get the like people acting, and it's just a different energy, and it's not an energy you can predict.
No.
So as he said with the gig theatre, they just like, look, let's just go with what is the last thing that we make that sounds the best. And by God's grace, some of the music was, all of the music really happy with.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's
as you look round, because like, it's in the round, you can see other members of the audience, everyone's heads just going like that.
Their feet, their hands.
Yeah,
like,
I watch for that. Yeah. Especially when you're doing politics. all I can do is sit and I'm just watching.
I feel like we made eye contact a couple of times. And I was like, why not looking? Why not looking? For people who might not know, how would you describe gig theatre?
So it's a really interesting thing that I'm getting better at answering. Because basically, this is the way I see it is, right? Inherently, if you say to somebody, what is theatre, a piece of theatre, they kind of know. If you say to them, what is a comedy gig, they know. You know what you're getting for a comedy gig. If I say to you, what's a music gig, you kind of know what it is. And so what Middle Child did was they looked at why, like, young people and, like, the different audiences were excited to go to a comedy gig or a music gig, but not to a piece of theatre.
Yeah.
So it was basically looking at the elements of like, what is it about a comedy gig or like a music gig or a concert that's accessible to like loads of different people that a piece of theatre sometimes isn't. So it's like looking at those elements and seeing how you can bring that into what traditionally we call theatre.
Wait a minute, are you saying that they made it up?
I was going to ask that. Didn't Middle Child invent it?
Middle Child are the pioneers of...
You're kidding me.
No.
Another thing that I did not know until today.
Yeah.
I did not know I thought you sent them the script 5 years ago, but they were like not in a... Like, I was thinking it was maybe... For them, it was too early.
No.
So, no, that's like extra.
Yeah.
Extra kudos.
They're the... Like, actually, it's really interesting. I spoke about this before in another interview. I'm going to turn my phone really quickly so I can show this to you guys, right? When Middle Child brought their first show, Weekend Rockstars, up to Edinburgh, they called it, a concept album play.
Nice.
That's what they called it, right? And then there was a review in The Guardian by Lynn Gardner, and she said that.
So that says, Weekend Rockstars at Edinburgh Festival Review, theatre that thinks it's a rock gig.
And then,
awesome. Middle Child's piece about 20-something slacker lifestyles works up a sweaty energy and has a tender soul. Is it a gig? Is it a storytelling piece? Is it a play?
And it's the first time I ever saw anything like written that was like gig.
What is it?
Spoke about gig theatre in that way. Is it a gig? And so I think, between Lynn Gardner's like thing and this, their piece, that's where the term is.
I feel a bit emotional, man. Because I'm all about doing new stuff.
That's why
we did Beats Bus. We checked, is anyone else doing that? Nah, let's do it. But I heard gig theatre and it made perfect sense to me. Because I'm not really a theatre person. Mm. But I would go to a gig and I like the drama in between.
Mm. So. And there's so much gig theatre now. Everyone's like, oh, everyone's doing gig theatre. But yeah, Middle Child.
Well, that's proud. Yeah.
Middle Child got a prime.
Was it like, cool. What, 4 years ago? So when they started it, 5 years
ago? Yeah.
Like,
2015 or...
Cool.
2014, I think. I think Weekend Rockstars was 2015. But I think they were doing stuff before that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
We're in the right place.
It's, like, not to sound like wanky or anything, but it's a really special
place to be.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you got to try. Yeah, you got to be at the front. Forefront of stuff.
Yeah.
Not tail end.
Mm. So how, especially because it is, you know, gig theatre, how do rehearsals work? Like, you've got like an audience who aren't there, but they are so part of the show, more so than in a like normal play. Definitely,
that, you can't predict that.
Yeah,
tell us
how it felt like when you got to Edinburgh and you had an audience. Did stuff change or?
Yeah,
stuff changes every night.
I don't know
what's gonna happen. There was one night when the moth just flew and Laurie was like, there's a moth there. Just pointed to the moth and looked at it in the middle of the scene.
I was staring at that moth for like 3 seasons. It's not moving. Is it gonna make it?
Like, you never.
A director, I suppose, this is my first acting or anything.
Yeah.
A director's job is to view it through the audience's eyes and to guide you as to what they're feeling. So his job is to critique you as how an audience would. So we are prepared for that. But there are loads of jokes in it. There are things in it that have become jokes that weren't intended to be jokes.
Yeah.
They were just, I don't know, just lines. And people now find them funny. So now we play them as jokes. So yeah, it does change a little bit.
What was it like for you stepping into this new world of theatre, having kind of not got that background?
Bruv, it was it was scary, frustrating and humbling, because like these guys, like I remember it's only a cast of four, there's nowhere to hide, you're not hiding behind, you know, the triangle of next guys and doing some backing singing. It was really exposing, and I found it really, really difficult. And I remember Paul said to me, I even texted him, I don't know if I told you, I texted him like beginning of, I think nearly the end of week three. And like week three is where obviously separates the men from the boys. And I was just like, I can't do this. I can't remember my lines. I'm getting confused. I don't feel confident. This is awkward. And Paul just said, look, just trust the process. You're doing really good. You will, it's, everyone has days where you feel completely dwarfed by other people's talents. You know, you've got people that are playing cello and then go, oh yeah, I'll just play keys for a bit. People are playing cello with a strap, walking around. Dan's like lines was probably about 15 times as many as I need to do. And he was like, yeah, so it was humbling, man. It was hard. But now, you know, now that I've done it, I fully believe that I can do it again and do more. So
yeah,
it started off, oh man, like even at lunch break, man, I'd be like shaking my head, smoking about 30 fags.
Yeah. You went, he did a bit of method acting where he went to the park. He went to the park and he just sat down and snaps.
It was hard, man. It was hard. I mean, when he told me that the co-producer, I was like, yeah, of course, man. Like, you want me to make hip hop beats?
Yeah.
I'll do that all day. And do you want to be in the play? Yeah, I'll just press play or do some drumming. That's like all hype. But yeah, and then obviously when I got the script, I was like, fucking hell, man. There's chunks in here. There's chunks of text. But yeah, I think the main thing to take away from it is middle child directors, Dan, they've all been through the process. They understand. They know it's painful, but they know the reward is going to be good. Yeah. So.
Also, you forgot you're also a hype man in it.
Yeah.
That bit, that's the next thing
you have to do. Yeah, that's tried and tested.
You could do that sometimes. Yeah.
I've been doing that routine for a while. It works.
So the performance was in the round. Was that a choice you made, or was that something that was kind of given to you with what venue you got?
Well, because Middle Child have been in that venue for 3 years now.
Okay.
So they always knew that they were going to be in that venue. So it was like day one in rehearsals, there's a circle on the floor. Yeah. And we always knew we were making it for the round. But I think it's the perfect thing to do.
I am so happy it's in the round.
Yeah, man.
I like being able to see like all the cast members and stuff, because like we are like we're like a band at the same time.
Yeah, we are.
We're and like if we're all sat in a line, I don't think it would.
No.
Also, you've got so much, you're queuing so much stuff. Like
You need to see people. And,
And the play is dynamic, man. It moves. So, like, I just feel like that space, like being able to like move in that way.
It really helps.
It helps. It helps a lot. Yeah,
and there's a massive contrast from when you are like literally spinning like crazy at the start, and then you've got big chunks where you stand still and it's so emotional and tiny.
Yeah.
It's a really. Like, so you started and ended the show in a very hello, like welcome to the show. I'm just going to tell you a bit of background, and then you finish it in a this is the future of the like as in this is what happens in the story next. Why did you make those choices that it wasn't, you know, part of the play weirdly?
So so in the play, those bits are kind of like prologues and epilogues, and I think that that's also part of the fairy tale and fable telling process. And in those bits, I think I'm described as the actor. And then in the other bit, that's when the story starts. It's a very deliberate choice, and there's like loads of like, there are reasons, but I'm not sure I want to explain them all. I let people I'll let people figure out why, because I talk about the actor in the beginning, or in the beginning. I've talked about the actor and the actor that came in, and so I'm talking as the actor then, and then I'm also the actor at the end. So like,
And is that a true story?
The actor that came into drum school? Yeah, definitely. It was Patterson Joseph that came in to talk to us. And it was David Hereward who had been going through some difficult times with his mental health. And that's like, it's fine to say that because he talks about it. He had a documentary on the BBC called My Psychosis and Me. I don't think it's still up there. But
And was that, do you think that was the seminal moment that made you think about writing this play, or
No, the way it works with me is I go, okay, it's interesting. And then I get like a sniff, like I feel like, oh yeah, I could write something about that. And then it doesn't fully form. So I've got loads of ideas about stuff, but I don't, when everything clicks into place, then I'll be like, now I can write it, because now I know what it is.
You've got all the bits.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. So that came in, and then I was thinking about it for a while, and I was like, yeah. I think I want to write something about this, but I don't know how it will work.
Yeah.
So, but no, it wasn't like clicking that moment. I was just like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then years later, wrote a play.
Have you had many people come up to you after the show and kind of express that they've had a similar experience?
Oh, yeah.
I'll let him talk about that. Oh, yeah. That is, if there's any one reaction that you get at the end of every show, it is always the same thing. And it isn't just, I'll speak for Dan now, because it's not, when I read it, it was like, yo, that's my life. Because at the end of the day, doesn't matter whether you're black, white, gay, Asian, doesn't matter. There is that system at school that makes you feel at some points that you are other. And it doesn't matter whether you're, it could be, as you say, a woman who goes into work on her first day might get that feeling. When you walk into a room and you feel like you kind of look a little bit different from people who are already in some sort of weird system. And I think there's some amount of people that come out that have been to private school and say, I went through the same thing.
Yeah, man.
People that were black said they went through the same thing. Asian, people that were gay, people that, some guy sent
Someone who's non-binary. Spoke about that. It's very similar.
Someone sent him like a 2-page message on, and it was really nice. And he was saying, man, like, yo, this is, it really means something to me. And he's actually in a play in the Fringe now. And somebody heckled him and called him Brownie while he was in the play, which I can't even imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was really down, came and seen the play, and he was like, yo, I'm going to go back out there and finish my run. And that reaction is the most common.
Yeah.
Like, it's been so, like, that's been the...
The main.
Like, to be honest, yeah, like, it's, we've had such nice critical response. We've been up for a bunch of awards and all of that, and it's really nice. Like, I'm not downplaying any of that. I'm so happy for it. But for me, the most incredible thing has been just like hearing human reactions, like, and like people being like, thank you for telling this story and this has affected me, and then coming up and the first, was that one of our first shows? You remember when the girl called Lizzie came up to me and she just hugged me and she just started crying and she said thank you, and this has been a validation of my story. And I was like,
that happens quite often.
And I was like I'm so happy that we're doing this. And the mad thing was, it turned out that she was a reviewer.
Yeah.
That was our first review. Shout out Lizzie.
It was our first review, man. It was a hench review.
Yeah, man. It was so unbelievable. Like, so no.
That was funny, that, because you tweeted, because someone came up to me and you were crying.
I cried at the end of that show, because at the end of the day,
I remember it.
I was like, oh, that's so amazing.
That was our first thing. Yeah.
And then the next thing in the morning, she'd given us 5 stars in a review, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's metal.
That was genuine as well, man. Just gassing you.
Nah. And so, that has been the nicest, for me, it's been the nicest thing about the process, just people being like, thank you for telling this story. It's not been told, and it's needed to be told. And it's a difficult story to tell, I think.
Yeah, we were going to ask, how does that affect you as performers? Like, it is a really difficult story that, you know, like, I think there's a lot of tears in the audience because it's so emotional. How does that, you know, can you just sort of shut it off, go home? And when people come up to talk to you and tell you about their stories as performers, how's that make you feel?
It's kind of bigger than me.
Yeah.
So I kind of a little bit, but that's because I'm like interested in other people. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so if somebody comes up to me and they want to talk, I just want to talk about, let's talk about what. So like, it's nice in a way, because I don't think about it so much as being an emotional journey for me and for my story, even though it is, you know, semi as autobiographical story, and a lot of the things in the play have happened to me, and like, I think about it like in a wider context of the people that it affects and having those conversations with people. And so I kind of put that onus not just on me and my reaction, I put it on like the people who I'm trying to reach.
Yeah.
And the stories I'm trying to tell, you know what I mean? And like having those conversations has been amazing and humbling. And that's, people are like, oh man, like you've been so like, oh, like grounded and stuff, and like you're like, so to keep me, I'm like, it's not like, it's mad to say this, yeah. This is the thing, this is mad to say this. I've written this play, I'm in this play a hell of a lot, but I truly, truly don't think it's like about me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, it's about stuff so much bigger than me. So that's
even when he said at the end, this is my art,
yeah,
he had to get forced to say that.
Yeah, I did,
he had
I did.
To change it, this is our art. And I was like, nah, it is your art.
Yeah, I did.
We are like, obviously, we're, bro, we're all artists, do you know what I mean? We understand.
Yeah.
But the story, the chronological storytelling is your art, and it's a particular reason why you've chosen those actions and left out other things. Because it's your art.
Yeah.
And your character, you said you're called the bird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is that also part of that?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So the bird, so there's the bird, and fundamentally there's three fables in the play, the fables of the canary and the crow.
Yeah.
And the play is about the bird deciding which world he fits in. But the thing that's so nice about fables and stuff is just like, they're so short, they're such like small things, but they're so loaded with meaning and messages and stuff like that, and people can take away from them whatever. So that's also why they exist. I just want people to, what I want is people to come to this play and go, okay, this is what I've taken away from it. I don't want to impose
want
to impose
that's really clear
their thoughts.
Definitely
about
really clear.
You know what to think. I just want people to go, okay,
that's good, man,
and think about it, and go away and think about it hopefully, and see how it relates to them, and see what messages that they found in it, rather than me going, this is, these people are bad, or this is bad, or this situation is bad, or like, I've tried to just tell a story, and rather than comment on it.
Every audience is different.
So after Edinburgh, what's happening to the show?
So it goes on the venue that we're in, the Paisley Roundabout, has a tour associated with it because it's a pop-down venue.
Yeah, yeah.
So like that actual venue will go to, I think it's 6 or 7 places around the UK until October. And that will end in October and then we'll see. Like there's like conversations ongoing.
Yeah.
But like I'm not really like privy to be honest. Like I let Middle Child kind of handle that. But yeah, we've had lots of conversations, lots of people are excited about potentially taking it here or there, theatres all over the place. Someone was talking about New York, somebody was talking about Australia, but all those conversations are ongoing, you know, they're not about me.
And there's talk of releasing the music as well.
Oh yeah, 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 we've got that's the thing that people have been hot on the most, they're like, when are we getting a cast album?
Yeah.
Cast recording, I've just been told. And yeah, we want to do it. It's just finding the time.
Mm-hmm.
Finding the time and yeah, being able to sit down and do it. We'll probably try and do it over, because Nigel's got like he does beatbox, so he's got his own studio and stuff. So we'll try and do it over maybe the tour. We'll just like, rather than go to the pub one day.
Yeah, rather than around. Have an actual break.
We'll just sit down and we'll record it. And we've done it in little bits and here and there. But we are hopefully going to get a full cast recording of all the stuff so people can listen and listen at that leisure.
Should have asked this earlier, but is this your first play that you've written that's been produced? Or
it's
even
the
that
first play that I've written that's been published. Yeah. And I couldn't be happier about that. Yeah.
Do you have any more brewing?
I've actually written about, I think I've written 4 plays. And I'm in the process of writing something else. Very early stages, that's potentially another musical thing. I've got stuff brewing and stuff that I have written before that I need to rework because they're good, but they need work. But
so a lot of pressure after this like critically phenomenal success, so
Perfect.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Thank you
so
much. Cheers, man. Appreciate
it. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Best of luck with the run.
Thank you very much.
And the tour.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
If you're a first-time listener, then we've got plenty of other episodes for you to go back to. Please give us a nice review and tell your friends and family where to find us.
See you soon. Bye.